The Homance Chronicles.
The female equivalent of a bromance.
So many poor choices.
But so many good times.
But so many poor choices. Man, these kitties have spring fever. Anyway, this is the Homance Chronicles, and I'm Sarah.
And I'm Nicole. And you know, when I joined this meeting, I realized I hadn't looked at myself in a very long time. And when I got on camera and I was like, whoa, that's what I look like? Okay.
Hey, it's cool because I did the same thing. I was like, oh, well, I still have on my shirt I was cleaning in today. So we're just here. We're making it through.
Oy vey.
I know. Between you having unexpected conversations and my cat going, aka missing with your bunny ears because she was really in the bed upstairs. Quite an eventful afternoon.
I mean, that was really only probably like a half an hour of your afternoon, but
yeah, probably about just 15 minutes, to be honest, but you start to consider.
I'm like, I'm pretty sure that my thing didn't take that much time and was not exciting at all. Anyway, I was very proud of myself for doing my homework yesterday, even though it was Easter Sunday.
Aw.
I didn't do anything for Easter. Like, my family didn't do anything, really. Like, my cousin did invite me over to my other cousin's house. Like, it's not like I didn't have anywhere to go. I just chose to not do anything.
Yeah.
I just was like, I don't think that I can handle people today.
At all.
I mean, I had made that decision days before. No one was expecting me to show up anywhere. But I really needed a down day. And even though it was my down day, I was like, I've got to do this research.
Yeah, but sometimes doing research on a down day is like still makes you feel good about the down
day. It does. It does. Well,
you only have one task instead of like 14. So,
yeah. Well, it feels good when you learn about these women and their stories and like you start digging in more and learning about them more. And then you also are like getting the satisfaction of crossing it off the list.
Mm-hmm.
The non-existent list, just the one that's in my head that continuously is on a loop.
Yes, that grows every day.
I used to, when I actually like went to the office and stuff, I used to write things down just so that I could cross them off. So sometimes it was like they were already done or about to be done, but I still wanted the gratification of the literal cross off on paper.
Yeah, I used to like make myself a morning list and I would have brushing my teeth on there.
So. I remember that. I remember that. But I thought that was more or less to help you focus.
It was, and it did help. Like at that point in my life, I needed that focus desperately. So it worked. And now I'm on autopilot again. Yay.
Remembering to brush your teeth without a note.
Yeah.
Does your family, I mean, I know that they were or are Catholic, but you don't really like practice Catholicism. But you guys do get together for Easter though, right?
Yeah, we did a Sunday, or I'm sorry, we did a little Saturday session because my cousin's up from Ohio. And Seth ended up having Sunday off also. So we got up and went fishing yesterday. And it was very freezing cold. But
I was like, okay.
Well. It was a lot of fun. And I can't wait to go back. Like, I like doing that kind of stuff. So it was really exciting that he invited me and that we went, you know,
mm-hmm.
got my fishing license and all that fun stuff. So I'm looking forward to it this summer. But yeah, we woke up early, like go to the office early and drove out there and hung out, freezing, came home. And it was just a day of like leftovers and lounging. We took a nap. I haven't taken a nap in so long, but yeah, we didn't. No Easter celebrations either. Just vibing.
Nice. Nice. I hung out with fam on Friday.
Nice.
So I got to meet my new niece.
Yay.
So it's not like I'm anti hang out with family or anti holiday get togethers. It just was like I'm not going to do that twice in one weekend, like drive
No.
over an hour, you know? And with my brother and sister-in-law being on like week one of new parents, I was like, at some point, they got to be over all of this visiting guests and whatnot. I mean, they did have people come on Sunday for Easter, but not like Easter dinner, you know, like it was.
Yeah, a quick bop in.
Yeah, I think so. So anyway, pretty low key. And oh, go ahead.
I was gonna say, I actually have a memory of Easter from when I was in college. It was my freshman year of college. My family went on spring break, and all the people I went to school with were at home, and the dorms were quiet, and I was alone. And I was like, wow, this is lovely. Like, it was my favorite, probably super stuck in my memory to this day because it was just so nice and peaceful.
Right.
And it
Yeah.
was like my first taste of like not doing anything for a holiday while everybody else did. And I was
Yeah.
like, I could do this more often. I could
I
certainly
do
get
it
used to
all the
this.
time, and
Yeah.
people think that it's like so sad or something.
It's not.
Like, I had a different friend who texted me today and was like, "What did you have for Easter dinner? What did you do for dinner yesterday? Whatever." And I was like, "I was home by myself." And she was like, "Oh, I wish I would have known you could have came to my house, blah, blah." I'm like, "Oh no, I wasn't looking for anywhere to go."
Yeah, like after I figured if you didn't ask me about being at my mom's house for Easter, I assumed you didn't need an invite anywhere because you weren't about to do nothing. Like I just made the assumption. I was like, she's likely gonna just hang out at her house, I bet. And I was right.
Well, yeah, because similarly to your college experience, it is quieter.
It's
Like, even though
nice.
you're at home, you still don't have a lot of like phone activity or anything, you know, like
Yeah.
everybody's busy doing whatever. And so it just in general is, I don't know.
It's
It's
lovely.
lovely. Yes, it is. My cousin just got back from a cruise and she has two kids. And it was one of her kids' birthdays. So they get back from the cruise. Then she has to like pick up a cake and like do birthday stuff. And then the following day, she's going to my other cousin, her brother's for Easter with all the
No.
family and everything. I was like, oh my God. I'm like, this is why I don't have children. Like, I wouldn't
This.
be able to deal. Like, I need a decompression day after vacation.
Yeah, that's
I like my holidays by myself.
But honestly,
Quiet
like
and uninterrupted. I don't know. I was like, I literally responded to her just like, wow, kids are too much work. She's like, yeah, truly.
you know, I think about it like that, but then I also think like she's gonna have somebody to wipe her ass when she needs it. I'm not. My diapers are gonna be just full. I'm gonna have to pay somebody.
Even if I had children, I would pay somebody. Are you
No,
kidding?
no. That's my upbringing, the expectations of my sort of ethnic upbringing is that like you are taking care of your parents. There's no way. No way.
Oh, no. Mm-mm.
Like,
I don't know. I am so used to this life. Like, even if I had had kids younger, like, I think that I would like to have my own space, my own separate whatever. I don't think I would be the grandma that lived with the family. I would have like,
a heart
yeah.
attack about it. No, I mean, I have a feeling you in particular are gonna go until you don't go anymore. Like, there's not gonna be a line of
Yeah.
delineation when you decide you're gonna get old. It's just gonna be like one day you're gonna be like, I'm tired, and then you're just gonna be done, and then that's that.
I haven't thought of my like demise, but that seems accurate.
Yeah, I consider it on occasion, just like everybody, because that's how I can't shut my mind off. But yes, that's how I imagined you would likely go out.
Yeah.
Anyway, So anyway, happy April, everybody.
Oh, I guess it's time to jump into our story and stop talking about all of the ways that I could potentially die.
Plenty of time to figure that one out anyway.
So I just went to our trusty old list and selfishly, because it was Easter and I was trying to have a down day and I didn't want to do anything, I was like, let me choose somebody young who doesn't have as much life to cover.
I get it.
It backfired on me because there was so much information, because she's actually in an age where there was appropriate record keeping and there was like, photographs and video and biographies and whatever, and I was like, ah, fuck, like it backfired.
Well.
So anyway, I did not skimp out on the details just because I was being lazy. I gave Miss Janis Joplin all the
Oh.
attention she needs.
Oh, you did a hell, you did yourself a disservice, ma'am. She's like, I'm a just do Janis Joplin. Bah, bah, bah. It was not a down day. Your
It was
narrator comes in.
not when you're talking about the first lady of rock and roll.
Well, let's get into it.
From the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame website, when they when you like log on and go to the page that talks about Janis, it says, quote, "The blues-influenced rocker had one of the most powerful voices of the 60s. Her voice is equal parts tough and vulnerable, a shout into the void that resonated with a generation."
Oh boy, that is a that's the marker.
I was like, okay, here we go.
God damn it.
Janis Lyn Joplin was born in Port Arthur, Texas on January 19th, 1943. She had two younger siblings, and her parents felt that Janis needed more attention than the other children. Janis was. Why are you looking at me like that?
That poor middle child.
Well, she's not. She's the oldest.
No, I
Oh, you
get
mean you're saying poor middle child because Janis wanted more attention?
Uh-huh.
Well, so Janis did a kind of, I don't want to say typical teenage rebellion because she never really came out of it. But as a teenager, she did kind of fall into the rebellious category and befriended a group of outcasts. And that's how she became familiar with blues music, because this group of misfits or whatever, listen to artists like Bessie Smith and Ma Rainey, and that's who Janis credits for influencing her decision to become a singer. So she started singing blues and folk music in high school. And around the same time, she was actually also bullied quite a bit. And part of it's because she specifically wanted to avoid pop culture. Like, she didn't want to blend in. She didn't want the same to wear the same stuff as the popular girls. And she would choose to wear men's shirts and short skirts and stuff like that. And I mean, this is the 50s. So, take your mind there, right?
Right.
She also
Segregation's
became,
still a thing.
yes, and we'll talk about that a little bit. So she also became overweight and suffered from acne, which I don't know how much of it was like a puberty stuff or how drastic it really was, but because in her defiance of normality, she was calling attention to herself already. And then that would kind of put a spotlight on these other things. So she actually had quite deep, like, acne scars that she needed to, like, dermabrasion for. And so the other kids in the high school would call her names like pig, freak. They would call her N-word lover or creep. And Janis states, quote, "I was a misfit. I read, I painted, I thought. I didn't hate N-words." Obviously, she didn't say N words. She said the
Right.
real word because it was the time. But you have to remember that she was in Texas and black people and white people were forbidden to intermingle. So, because she liked blues music, because she liked quote unquote black people music, she got yelled at. But it was even hard for her to like find these blues recordings and stuff. So she had to like seek them out. She was actually quite ballsy. And she was very like tough talking, and she started drinking in high school. She did graduate in 1960 and attended Lamar State College of Technology in Beaumont, Texas. And she also went to the University of Texas at Austin. She didn't graduate from college, though. When she was in Austin, she began performing folk songs, and on campus, she would perform at this gas station that was turned into a bar with the Waller Creek Boys musical trio. So her forceful, gutsy singing style amazed all of the audiences, and she didn't sound like any other white female vocalists at the time. Her first song was called What Good Can Drinkin' Do? So, as I mentioned, she had an alcohol problem starting in high school. So she recorded that song in December 1962 at just another like student's house. But the campus newspaper, the Daily Texan, ran a profile on her, and the profile was called She Dares to Be Different.
Oh, my.
Yeah, the article began, she goes barefooted when she feels like it, wears Levi's to class because they're more comfortable, and carries her auto harp with her everywhere she goes so that in case she gets the urge to break in a song, it'll be handy. Her name is Janis Joplin.
Ooh, the chill bumps.
Right? So the weird thing is that even the article said she dares to be different, and throughout all of the research that I did, like she wanted to be different, but she also wanted to be liked.
Right, because she was
So,
bullied.
right. So there's this weird, I don't know, polarity between what she wants to present and how she feels. Because even after she like puts out music, like she wants to know if every if people like it, if she likes it, if like she doesn't have this like I don't care what people think attitude,
Right.
but she comes off like she does. So it's just interesting. So anyway, she drops out of college in 1963 and hitchhikes to San Francisco with her friend Chet Helms, and they kind of go to, she goes to LA between like going to colleges and just nothing's like successful. Her trip out west isn't successful either. She found herself in the Haight-Ashbury neighborhood outside of San Francisco, which is, at least at that time, I don't know about now, but at that time it was notoriously drug fueled. So,
Oh yeah, it still is.
okay. And so she played some gigs. She was at the 1963 Monterey Folk Festival. She spent some time in New York City. She really couldn't get out of her own way. Her drinking and drug use kind of sped up. She was regularly using speed and heroin and other drugs, and you know, you think like based on how much drug and alcohol use that she has that she's much older, but she's really not, because in May 1965 she's only 22,
Right.
and her friends in San Francisco start noticing how much the drugs are affecting her, and they described her body as skeletal and emaciated. And so they actually persuaded her to go home to Port Arthur.
Wow, I did not know
Yeah.
that.
Yeah. So her friends threw her a bus fare party so that she could return home to her parents in Texas. 5 years after that, though, she did an interview with Rolling Stone magazine and is quoted saying, "I didn't have many friends and I didn't like the ones I had." She clearly wasn't happy about this decision, even though they had her best interest at heart. So when she's back at her parents' house, she's all of 88 pounds.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So she changes her lifestyle. She avoids drugs and alcohol. She adopts this beehive hairdo. She enrolls at Lamar University and becomes an anthropology major.
Oh, okay.
She even had a brief engagement to Peter DeBlanc, but there's just not a lot of information on that. So while she was at home, she started seeing a psychiatric social worker named Bernard Garantano. So after Janice passed away, which I guess spoiler alert, but I think we all know that, right? Her social worker did an interview with one of the many biographers, Meyer Friedman, and he said to the biographer that Janice couldn't see a career in singing without drugs and alcohol.
It
Like,
like
she
went
just
hand in
didn't
hand
know
for her.
how to avoid relapsing if she was going to follow her music. So Bernard tried to reassure her that she didn't have to use narcotics to succeed in the music business. But she, I don't know. She just, I guess they were tied together in her mind. Like, she couldn't do one without the other.
Right.
And she, again, so desperately didn't want to be like everybody else. She said that if she avoided singing professionally, then she would become a key punch operator or a secretary or a wife and mother. And she would just be similar to all the other women in small town Texas.
I mean, she's running from that. I get it.
So she decides to follow music and goes back to San Francisco in 1966. So her hitchhiking friend from earlier, Chet, he actually had stayed out there, made some connections, and he sent a different friend to Texas to come get her, basically recruit her to sing for this band called Big Brother and the Holding Company. Now, they were like a psychedelic rock band, and this is kind of when she started having her look that we know her by today, which is like that hippie look with the frizzy hair and the big glasses and her kind of like iconic looking self. So she lies to her parents and tells them that she's leaving her hometown to just go to Austin. Because I think they're like maybe, 100 miles apart or something like that in Texas. So anyway, she doesn't let them know that she's in San Francisco till she gets there. She writes a letter from there and says like, "Hey, I'm here."
Could you imagine like having that ability to just like nobody can trace me. Boop, I'm here, bitches. Now you're off the grid and people are like, oh, panic.
Pre-technology, pre-phones, pre-computers, yes. So, initially she avoided drugs, and her roommates and bandmates and everybody were supportive. Her and her bandmates all moved in together like communally, and they ended up living down the street from the Grateful Dead. So those two bands would hang out together
That's
on a regular
cool.
basis. Yeah. So they even did a few gigs together and stuff. After about a year of her being with this band, they had done some small gigs, they had switched some managers, et cetera, et cetera. So June 1967, they go to the Monterey Pop Festival. This festival is a one-off event. It's known as a turning point in American counterculture.
Whoa.
So there were appearances by like the Jimi Hendrix Experience, Otis Redding, like major players, right?
Classics.
So
Now.
parts of the event were filmed, and that includes Janis's performance. And so it's in a documentary.
That's really cool. I'm like
Stoked
stoked that we can watch it still.
And so Janis and her band, Big Brother and the Holding Company, perform a song called Ball and Chain. But nobody really cared about the band. Like, everybody cared about Janis. And she got a ton of praise. She had these incredible vocals. I mean, obviously, some of the raspiness is fueled by heroin and, other drugs and bourbon. She would drink bourbon straight from the bottle during gigs. So,
Maniac.
it left her very uninhibited, which kind of gave her this performance of like being sexual and raw and gutsy. And so she was very memorable. She received a lot of attention. And basically, after this performance, she is now leading female rock and blues singer of the era. So, after hearing Janis at the Monterey Pop Festival, Columbia Records president Clive Davis, which was not a name that I thought I was going to come by in this story, I'm like, he's known for like the Whitney Houstons, right? So Clive Davis wanted to sign the band, and Albert Grossman, who was managing Bob Dylan and like Peter, Paul, and Mary at the time,
Wow.
became the band's manager.
That's fucking crazy.
I know. So they were able to get a record deal. And their recordings for Mainstream Records, which was the record company they were with before Columbia, didn't really have much of an audience. But the record that they did with Columbia, called Cheap Thrills, was a huge hit. So the album's super successful. It's certified gold. But the attention that Janis is getting versus the band is causing some problems.
Of course.
Yes. So Cheap Thrills help solidify Joplin's reputation as a unique, dynamic, bluesy rock singer. But the group's getting frustrated. So then Janis feels like she's being held back professionally. So then she decides to leave Big Brother. And even though they've been like a family to her, they lived together. Remember the communal living and everything? Like, they were supportive of her non-drug use and all that kind of stuff. Anyway, she decides to leave. And so she forms a new backup group called the Cosmic Blues Band. So when she forms this new band, she's allegedly shooting at least $200 worth of heroin per day,
Oh my
which
God.
is equivalent to about $1,600 now
Holy shit.
a day. So, although we like to say that the success and her vocals are the reasons for part of the frustrations, I think we can assume that her
Also.
lifestyle also did not help. And that's why, like, I keep saying, like, basically every update is a year. Like, she goes every year, there's like some big thing.
Right.
So anyway, there were major efforts though to try to like keep her clean during her recording with the Cosmic Blues Band, but didn't really work out that well.
Well, I imagine no.
They did, though, end up getting a spot at Woodstock. So the album, I Got 'Em Old Cosmic Blues Again, Mama, goes gold. They get a stop. They get a spot at Woodstock, but it's they didn't actually get on stage until 2 a.m.
Oh my God.
on like a Sunday. Yeah. So it was like Saturday night going into Sunday, 2 a.m. because there were delays and there were contracts with bands that needed to go before them. So she had just told the band that they were just doing like another gig. Like her band didn't know. But then they flew in on a helicopter over the crowd.
My God, what at 2 a.m.?
Anyway, there's a bunch of other like nonsense that goes along with that story, but it was like, too much of an offshoot. There's this whole thing about how Janice is like super excited after she sees the sides of the crowd and she's like hanging out in front of the stage, waiting to go on with her like lesbian lover. And there's like a picture or video of them for a few minutes and like it went deep.
Uh-oh.
So anyway, shortly after Woodstock, though, that band broke up.
As they do.
So then now we're at February 1970. We have not come that far in the dates.
No, not at all.
Janice is 27. She travels to Brazil with her costume designer friend. And so she stops doing drugs and alcohol while she's in Brazil.
That's lovely.
I don't know how she's able to start and stop when it's her drug use is so bad. Like, sounds crazy. You'd think
Right.
that she'd die from like the withdrawals or something. Anyway, so she's in Brazil, supposedly clean, and she meets a fellow American tourist named David Nyhaus. And he was just bebopping, traveling around the world. And Janice's sister Laura said in a biography that David was an upper middle class Cincinnati kid who had studied communications at Notre Dame and had joined the Peace Corps after college and worked in a small village in Turkey. He tried law school, but then when he met Janice, he was just taking time off.
Real guy, real productive guy.
Well, no, I mean, he sounds like the complete opposite of her.
Oh.
He's like upper middle class, goes to Notre Dame in the Peace Corps, like doing all this like higher education, do-gooder stuff, right? Just doesn't sound like they would be compatible.
Oh, he sounds tired to me, but anyway.
Well, when they get back to the US, Janice starts doing drugs again, and her relationship with David ends because he witnesses her shooting the drugs, and obviously he's not about that life based on the sister's explanation of him. Plus, the relationship was complicated by her ongoing romantic relationship with Peggy Castera. And Peggy is the woman I just mentioned who was at Woodstock with her. Peggy's also an addict. So anyway, Janice refuses to take time off to travel the world with David, which I'm like,
Okay.
girl. Seems like a missed opportunity to me.
Got it.
Now at this point, she forms a new band called Full Tilt Boogie. The Grateful Dead on tour, and that's who she recorded her final studio album with. Her last album was called Pearl, and it was released in 1971 after Janis died. So Pearl became the biggest selling album of her career and featured her biggest hit single, a cover by Kris Kristofferson, who was actually also a lover at one point as well. The song Me and Bobby McGee. And so the opening track called Move Over was written by Janis, and it was reflecting on the way that she felt about how men treated women in relationships. And then she also wrote Mercedes-Benz, which included like social commentary, and on the album was presented with a acapella arrangement. She did a cover of Buried Alive in the Blues, and her vocals were supposed to be added the day that she was found dead. So her vocals were not added, and they just put in the instrumental of that song.
Wow.
So on Sunday evening, October 4th, 1970, at 27 years old, Janis was found dead on the floor of her room at the Landmark Motor Hotel in California by her road manager and close friend, John Byrne Cook. So although Janis died of a heroin overdose, a biographer by the name of Holly George Warren says that her death was probably actually more fueled by her alcohol consumption. She was such a heavy drinker that it may have really been the source. And then other people are saying that it was because she had been clean from heroin for months and then got a pure form of the drug.
Oh.
And that's what killed her.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, probably the combination of the two.
Right. Who doctors know for sure, I'm sure.
Yeah. So anyway, Holly, the biographer, said that at the time of Janice's death, she was actually trying to cut back on alcohol because she was concerned about what it was doing to her vocally.
Oh.
So there was a bunch of other gossip kind of rumors, riffraff about the fact that the person that Janis was engaged to at the time, which I think she was like engaged like 3 or 4 times. Like I lost track. I was like, who are these people?
Yeah.
The man that she was engaged to at the time, plus her female Peggy. Romantic partner, Peggy, they both were supposed to hang out with her the like Friday night before she passed, that like Friday or Saturday before she passed that Sunday. And neither of them followed through on their plans.
Oh, what the fuck?
And that there also wasn't great communication about why they weren't following through. So I don't know if Janis got ghosted or what exactly happened. Peggy has stated that she tried to call, but Janis told the front desk to like hold the calls after a certain time. So her call couldn't get to her. I mean, it's just, I don't know. I didn't like track it all down because it just seems like it's trying
like
to point blame at something or someone, like that Janis
like,
overdosed because she was so sad that her fiance and friend like left her in the dust that weekend or something. I'm like, I don't know. I mean,
it wasn't my
I don't want to.
She didn't have her phone on. Yeah.
I don't want to perpetuate false narratives, you know, but
yep.
I'm sure that it's in one of the documentaries. So Janis was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1995 and given a Grammy Lifetime Achievement Award in 2005. And then just last year in 2023, Rolling Stone ranked Joplin at number 78 on its list of the 200 greatest singers of all time.
Which is just so crazy because it's almost 100 years ago. And
what?
She's still just like topping charts, making, stirring it up, you know.
I don't know if she's topping charts, but she stays relevant.
Well, yeah, there you go.
There is a following, a dedication to her, with Rolling Stone including her still in this like top 200 type list. I mean, it's clearly she has an unforgettable force, considering she was only 27 when she passed and had basically put out two, maybe three albums. And it sounds like she really didn't even do that many like big time live performances. It just so happens to be that she got two really good ones.
Right. She was just very exposed very quickly. But
So
that's
my
what happens.
sources, my sources today are Wikipedia, janisjoplin.com, biography.com, janisjoplin.net, rockhall.com, britannica.com, and bbc.com.
Well, damn. Thank you. Thank you for taking your down day to cover Miss Joplin there. That is no small task. Because you cut out a lot of the meat. Not in the bad way, but in the like the drama messy way.
I did because I was like, this isn't necessarily adding to her story.
Right. Which it didn't. And I'm glad you didn't, because it gives everybody a clear path of what actually happened without he said, she said, this is the circumstance, this is how I remember it. Like, you just gave us the facts, which I appreciate, because I don't think I knew that the architecture of her story. You know what I mean? I just knew about her. So, thank
Yeah,
you.
she's always been this like almost like a figment of my imagination in a way.
Right.
Like she was a real person, but I didn't know who she was. Like obviously I was born after her. So, I didn't live during the time when she became popular, but it's like you can't not know who she is.
Yes. I
You
don't,
know?
I honestly, I can't say anymore because I'm probably too old, but I remember when we were in high school and even in college, people would reference her as like the mother hippie. Like she was the hippie back in the day. She's almost like a made up character, like a Betty Crocker.
I mean, Betty Crocker really is fictional, though. But yes, I mean, that's why I said she's like this figment of my imagination. Like she exists somehow still, but she doesn't.
Right.
So the interesting thing is, though, that considering she was born in 1943, like even if she was alive today, she'd be younger than my grandmother. So I don't know. It like puts into perspective of the 60s seem like they were kind of a long time ago, but they really weren't. Like she would have still been
No.
alive and kicking. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
Like,
exactly.
and that's partly why her influence is still lasted. Because there continues to be, groups of high school kids who are getting into like rock music and will still wear a Pink Floyd t-shirt or whatever, you know?
Right.
And so her likeness will probably just always be out there.
Which I'm thrilled about. Because I think ultimately she was a good person.
Well, and the thing is, like, she was deeply disturbed in like an emotional capacity. And I don't know if there's more to her story or something that happened with her childhood. She obviously came from a small town, probably was kind of poor and
I have a
whatever.
feeling that's
But
part, a big part of it.
I don't, there's still something that's missing from the story that leads her to have such a drastic turn.
I feel like we probably, had she made it through her 20s, we probably would have heard about it later in her career after she like calmed down and matured, and she would have been on an interview like VH1 and be like, so when I was younger. But
I mean, even her sister did a biography on her. And nothing stood out to me of the sister saying that there was like anything crazy going on in their household. But
Right.
you know, the people who have that like deep genius or that deep, deep talent, who sometimes are just, you know, born with it,
Yes.
their brains just don't function the same way as everybody else's.
Nope, and that's okay.
Yeah. And so, I mean, maybe nothing did happen to her. It's just the way her brain functioned, you know? And maybe all the drug use was to calm down undiagnosed, you know, ADHD
Situations.
or personality disorder or something, you know what I mean? Something
Yep.
that nowadays we would diagnose and medicate properly.
Right.
Because yeah, there I just anecdotally, I feel like my experience has led me to believe that people who have like these super deep passions and talents that are just raw also, you know, don't leverage the full capacity of the brain, right? They're just so right-brained, like so creative that, you know, you see a lot of like drug and alcohol use mixed with musicians. And maybe that was part of her reason why she told the social worker, like, I just don't see how I can do it without.
Yeah, I mean, let's be honest. I'm more comfortable being in front of people after I've had a couple of drinks.
That too. That
There's just my
too.
two cents of like, oh, I mean, I get it. Oh, I guess don't do this, buddy. Okay.
Yeah. The good old gutsy juice.
Yep. The gutsy juice. What do we call it? Liquid courage?
Liquid courage, yeah.
Still is most days for a lot of people. But
Anyway, thank you, Miss Janice, for your contributions.
yes.
And I mean, honestly, I was hoping that from learning more about her and her story, that I would understand her better. I don't know if I understand her better. I think I just can follow her story.
Right.
Like it still was like every year there was like bouncing around, switching this, switching that. You know, I'm gonna live here, then I'm gonna live there. I'm gonna have this band, then I'm gonna have that band. Like
Right.
I'm like, I don't like I now I have a timeline, but I still don't know if I totally understand her.
I still have whiplash. Well, at least we know better about her timeline. So thank you. Thank you and thank her again. All right. Is it Atta Girl time?
It is. It's Atta Girl time.
Aside from your down day.
Yeah. Atta Girls are where we pat ourselves on the back for something good that we've done or something good that's happened to us. I mentioned at the top of the show how I got to meet my niece. So that was pretty good thing that happened to me.
And I'll accept it. It's a big deal. Your niece is new to the world. Actually, our niece.
Yeah,
Let's
she
be
was.
honest.
I met her when she was what, 8 days old or something. So, yeah,
I'll
that
just
was
let her know
good.
I was a little sick that day. It's fine. My Atta Girl actually happened all day today. It's a culmination of though of me having my shit together, like being on top of it. So I've had a good streak with how my house, keeping it clean, and like just instead of having to do the deep dive cleans, just having the surface level zhuzhes, you know what I'm saying? And I've gotten to that point now. So like I was able to clean my whole house in one day, and I still finished my little crochet project I had. And things were going good, and I'm like feeling all right, even though I had the day off to do all this stuff.
Sure.
My Sundays will typically consist of this, so I'm proud of myself.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Well, you were able to push your Sunday stuff to Monday so that you could go fishing.
Exactly. And
Yeah.
catch nothing.
Yeah. I guess I could do something that I did is my painter who has been at the house like every other day for weeks now. Because he's painting the ceilings and patching all the holes, and more holes just keep appearing. Like every time he patches one, like another one appears, and we're like, where did that guy? And so I keep asking him, like, do you need me to move this? Do you want this out of the way? Like, you know, trying to understand what his plan is or whatever. Anyway, I just took it upon myself to not listen to him where he says, oh, it'll be okay. Oh, don't worry about it. And moved a bunch of shit around and took stuff into the basement. I did like 1,000 steps up and down, up and down, up and down, so that he would have clearer paths to work in one of the rooms, even though he told me that I didn't have to move anything and he could work around it. And then when he came in, he was like, oh my God, look, I have lanes. He's like, I
Proud
was kind of worried about it. And I'm like, well, what? I asked you. Anyway, so me
Proud of
being
you.
my typical proactive self, got it done before he needed to get in there. So
That's cool. I'm happy for you.
yeah.
Congratulations. Atta girl.
Thank you.
Go
Thanks.
us.
Right?
Look at us. Just going.
Doing it. If you liked what you heard today, please rate, review, subscribe. It really helps us out if you tell people that you like us. You can also request a hoe of history if you go to Instagram at homance underscore chronicles, or you can email it homancepodcast@gmail.com, or you can join the closed group on Facebook, the Homance Chronicles Judgment Free Zone.
Mayhem. Homance out.